The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Boxing with Chris Mannix, part of the Volume Sports Podcast Network. We got a good show lined up for you. My friends Ak and Barak, the co-hosts of the DAZN Boxing Show, they joined me. I had a whole plan and a list of things to talk about with Ak and Barak, but we spent more than 30 minutes on one subject, and that is Gervonta Davis. We talked about Davis's growth as an attraction and just where does he rank as a boxer? Let me just say we strongly disagree, but I thought it was a great conversation with Ak and Barak. A little bit later on, Jojo Diaz, the former 130-pound title holder, he is moving up to 135 pounds and jumping right into the fire against Javier Fortuna. That's a fight that you'll see next week, July 9th, on DAZN. Jojo talks about the decision to move up in weight, what he thinks about the fight with Fortuna, and if this could be the start of a campaign at a new weight class. So stick around for that. As always, best way to support the pod, get over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, on to the show. All right, my guests this week are the hosts of the DAZN Boxing Show, the only daily show on the internet. It's a program you can see every weekday on the DAZN app or at DAZN.com. They're also full-fledged members of the Gervonta Davis fan club. They are Ak and Barak. Fellas, before I get into this stuff, which I'm sure we'll argue about, you know, I've always wondered, you two have become synonymous with each other. Ak, how did this working relationship become a thing with Barak?
Well, I mean, Barak and I go way back, you know. I mean, I probably was about 13 years old when I first met Barak in the streets of Brooklyn, New York. So we initially met on a basketball court, and later on in life, we ran into each other randomly two times when I just started to dabble in the boxing world. And the rest is history. You know, he joined the team. One thing led to another. Sirius XM, This Is 50, and DAZN, and we're here. But it's a long story.
And now Boxing with Chris Mannix, you know, so now we've made it, even though you say we're the member of the Gervonta Davis and you're the cheerleader of Boo Boo Andre.
Like, hey, I stand by that. I proudly wear that t-shirt. I think
he's
downstairs.
Great too, but I'm not going to knock another great fighter.
No, we're not knocking. We're more pointing out what should be. Well, we'll get into that right now. All right. Let's get into it right off the bat there. Gervonta Davis, three-division title holder, and I use that word title holder purposefully for this conversation. Stopped Mario Barrios this past weekend. A lot of people fired up about that performance, and I was too. It reinforced that Davis is a star. 16,000-plus fans, that's something. What I expect will be strong pay-per-view sales, that's something. A television-friendly style, that's what gets you the big checks. He reminds me, guys, of kind of a smaller version of Deontay Wilder with how he kind of leans into his power as often as he does. Where the Davis argument loses me is when it's used to make the case that Davis is now an elite fighter. I don't believe Mario Barrios to me was like at best 7th or 8th in the 140-pound rankings, which are pretty thin in my opinion, after the top five. So I'll turn it to you guys first. Barak, we'll start with you. What did that win over Barrios tell you or do for you with Gervonta Davis, the boxer?
Well, he was up on all of the scorecards, so it's not like he can't box. He was tentative because he's fighting two weight classes above his norm. You know, so it did solidify him as one of the all-time greats in moving up in weight. Would I say that I don't mess around with the trinkets. I don't mess around with the belts. I would say Legitimately, he's probably a one division champ, and that's two straps. It's the IBF and the Super WBA. So I don't want to put that stain on him because that really has nothing to do with him, you know. But as far as his accomplishments, going up two weight classes and beating a live dog, I got to give it to him.
Ak, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I agree with Barack in terms of him showing boxing ability. In fact, he showed good defense throughout that fight, even though Barrios had, you know, he'd done well and had moments in that fight. But you can tell throughout the fight who was the superior boxer. But, you know, Chris, I want to bring a guy that is considered one of the best fighters in the world. Now his name is Errol Spence Jr. Before he even fought for a world title, when he fought Leonard Bondue, right, people were saying he's an elite fighter. This is before he even fought for a world title, because we saw how he looked in a ring against Chris Algieri, against guys like Samuel Vargas. We said, we pegged that guy to be one of the top welterweights in the world before he fought Kell Brook. So we're talking about a guy, Gervonta Davis, who beat an undefeated, in fact, his non-fights, his opponent's records are around 220-11, right? His last nine fights. But this guy beat an undefeated Pedraza at 130. Now, I'm not getting into the belt things. I'm just talking about why I consider him elite. He destroyed a Pedraza who was undefeated at the time and was a top junior lightweight, right? Since then, yeah, he hasn't fought.
Not just destroyed him. He outboxed him.
Boxed him and knocked him out. Now, people say that, you know, Santa Cruz is a small guy. Meanwhile, in stature, he's taller than him, longer than him, three-division world champion, or is it four divisions for Santa Cruz? I know you don't think he's a great fighter, Chris. I can respect your opinion on that. But I base eliteness a lot of times on what I see that a guy can do inside the ring. And yes, beating top-level guys plays a part in that. But just as I saw Errol being elite before he fought Kell Brook, I'm gonna say that Gervonta is elite after winning multiple world titles.
Well, you know, you were proven right with Errol Spence after Kell Brook. He went on to beat some of the top welterweights in boxing. I don't know if you'll be right about Gervonta Davis at this point. Now, I would push back on the resume here. I'll grant you Pedraza. Absolutely. His defining moment. Pedraza was an undefeated, recognized world champion, I think in his fourth title defense at that point, and Gervonta outboxed him, and then he stopped him in that seventh round. That was Gervonta's coming out party. After that, who cares? What are we talking about here? Are you going to sit there and tell me, and you can answer this, either one of you, is Liam Walsh a quality win for Gervonta Davis?
No, he's an undefeated fighter, and when you compare him to Gervonta Davis, he's nothing, and I get it. But we're talking about – I want to talk about Leo Santa Cruz. I know
– Oh, no, hold on. I want to get to that. But before we get to Santa Cruz, you guys are talking – or at least, Ak, you were talking about records of opponents. Like, Liam Walsh was a domestic fighter before he fought Gervonta Davis. Afterwards, he went back to being a defensive
fighter. Why do you back Boo Boo Andrade if he hasn't fought any champions?
Thank you.
He's begging to fight them.
That's not the question. I feel the same way. I'm a fan of his. I'm a friend of his. But yeah. I'm saying, why do you think he's a good fighter if he hasn't fought champions?
Well, Olympic background, for one. Like, that tells me something about him. And the eyeball test, with I watch him just shut
Gervonta
out boxers
Davis
every single
has
time.
A way better eyeball test. A way better. He's the most, besides Terrence Crawford, he is the most dominant fighter in the sport today. The most, hands down.
Okay. Oh, come.
What? Chris, if you said
name somebody. Name somebody who's more dominant than him at the championship level.
Terrence Crawford.
But even more dominant than both of those guys who are getting unanimous decisions.
Canelo Alvarez.
No.
Like, what are we doing?
No,
like,
I'm talking about dominant. That means he's destroying everybody. At the championship level, he's knocking everybody out. He is the most
Canelo
dominant.
Canelo just broke Billy Joe Saunders' face. Like,
and he went 12 rounds with Danny Jacobs. And he went 12 rounds with
Chavez Jr. Chavez Jr. was like one thing Chavez has got is a good chin. Like, he just stood there and took punches for 12 rounds. I remember that fight.
Yeah.
You don't knock guys out when you get to the highest level. And my biggest issue with Gervonta Davis is that Liam Walsh was not a great
win. Hold on.
Francisco Fonseca was undefeated at the time. Was not a great win. I want you to look at Fonseca's record. I did. Until that point, he had not faced anyone that would even be described as a C-level opponent.
But that doesn't mean he's not. That doesn't mean he's not elite, Chris. If you felt when he beat Pedraza that was a coming out party, did you put him in? Did you feel like he was an elite fighter then?
No, I put him in the same category as I probably put Oscar Valdez. That he had one really good win, and let's see what happens when he faces other top opponents.
But because he hasn't fought top level opposition, in your opinion, afterwards,
no,
I understand that. I'm saying. According to Chris, he doesn't feel like he has a great resume after that win. But it doesn't diminish him as a fighter in his skill if Floyd and Leonard haven't made those fights happen. I get that. I want to see him fight the top lightweights of the world. But I'm not going to say because he hasn't, he's not an elite fighter. He's proven that he's an elite fighter. Now, of course, we want to see him share the ring with other elite fighters, but it doesn't mean he's not.
Well, listen, Mike Tyson said he's the greatest fighter in the world. Canelo says he's great. Shakur Stevenson says he's great. Sergio Mora. All of these guys say he's great, but Chris Mannix says he doesn't. I think we outweigh you, man.
That's fine, but minority opinions can rule the day. It, you know, can prove to be right. I base, and Barack, you had, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, you believe Gervonta's top 10 pound for pound, correct?
Yes.
So do
okay.
I.
That's nuts because accomplishments, a top 10 is for accomplishments. If you prove yourself to get inside the top 10, not what you look like against vastly inferior opponents. And we can talk about Leo Santa Cruz right now if you want to. Leo Santa Cruz was excellent at 122, highly accomplished at 126, had done virtually nothing at 130. Didn't have power at 126 anyway. Definitely didn't have power at 130. The fight before he faced Gervonta Davis, I believe that was on a Wilder undercard.
Yes,
I was there for that. He looked washed. He looked completely washed. And if you ask people around Leo, that was basically a cash out moment. Like, let's take advantage of Leo's name and give him to Gervonta Davis. Tremendous matchmaking. I give the people at Mayweather Promotions, Al Haymon, credit. Tremendous matchmaking up to this point. But don't tell me that Leo Santa Cruz was a quality win because of everything he's done three weight classes under. Was Carl Frampton some kind of quality win for Jamel Herring? He was basically a 122 fighting at 130. These weight classes do matter, guys. And fighting guys outside your weight class has to be factored into the conversation.
Four pounds. It's literally 4 pounds.
It is 4 pounds.
That's big.
And Carl Frampton is a great fighter. He outboxed Carl Frampton. He probably would have been undefeated going into Gervonta Davis if he didn't have his father being sick on his mind the first time before Carl Frampton.
No, but we
and Abner Mares is a very, very proven three-division champ, and he outboxed Abner Mares. You don't have to have power to be a good fighter.
You have to have power to keep guys away from you.
Another thing,
it doesn't make you a bad fighter. You can still be a good fighter.
We can't downplay guys moving up if they lose or they don't perform well, because when guys move up and they do well, we praise them. I mean, you're not going to always be successful moving up. It doesn't mean it's not a good win, you know, in this instance, for Gervonta Davis. I mean, look, I don't agree with Barack in terms of Gervonta being more dominant than Canelo. I do agree he's one of the top dominant fighters in the world, because I think you can dominate somebody without knocking them out, and Canelo has been very dominant. But I put him right up there with Canelo and Crawford in terms of being a killer in the ring, being dominant in a sense where he's the boss in that ring, regardless of who's in front of him. I mean, look, Chris, tell me this. What guy at 130 or 135 would you put your house on that can beat Gervonta Davis right now? Who are you 100% sure that Gervonta cannot beat?
I'm not 100% sure of anybody, just like I'm not 100% sure Gervonta could beat those guys either. I'm not 100% sure he beats Oscar Valdez. I'm not 100% sure he beats Shakur Stevenson.
Oscar Valdez won the last six rounds with
hold on. Oscar Valdez just stopped the boogeyman at 130 at that point. Miguel Burchell was a big punching guy at 130.
That's it.
Come
a
on.
Big puncher.
Let's be real.
A big puncher. Not a great boxer at all. A big puncher.
I have not seen enough from Gervonta Davis to make me believe he's a great boxer. Like that, you have to show me that against other great boxers. I haven't seen that yet. And I go back, you guys keep talking. I watch the show every day.
Hey, Chris, compare him to Burchell then. I mean, would you say?
Forget Burchell. Comparing to Valdez, who's got the better resume, Oscar Valdez or Gervonta Davis?
Gervonta Davis, in my opinion.
That's nonsense.
I mean, he beat one guy, Valdez.
So did Gervonta.
What about Valdez's two fights prior to Burchell? Were you impressed? I bet you had Burchell winning that fight before going into it.
Who did he fight? I'm forgetting.
No, I'm saying, I'm just talking about his performances. I don't even care about who he fought. It's true. And I like Valdez. Think he's a hell of a fighter.
Do you think Valdez wants to fight Javonte Davis, Chris?
Sure. Why wouldn't he?
Because he's a killer.
Do you think these guys, first of all, you guys both know, nobody's scared of anybody.
That's not true, but I'll let you say that. That is really not
true. 90+% let's say 95% of guys aren't really scared.
No, it's not scared to lose their title.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's scared. That's enough scared to not want to fight somebody.
But you kind of implied that Valdez was afraid of, like, getting knocked out there. I don't think guys in boxing are, at least not one.
I think Valdez has heart. I mean, he went in there with Brett Chet, like you said, is a hell of a puncher.
I just don't think he wants to fight Javonte Davis.
Javonte has something different than the other guys. That twitch, that speed and power and those reflexes, that's not regular, Chris. I mean, I know that he has to do it against guys like, you know, whether it's Ryan Garcia, Devin Haney, Shakur, and those guys. But he has it. I mean, you can't be blind to that, Chris.
I'm not blind to that, but I can't base an opinion as a guy, as a top 10 pound-for-pound guy, because of what I see him do against inferior opponents. I didn't base, like, Canelo's maybe a bad example, but Canelo, right, how he fought against Gennady Golovkin elevated him tenfold in my mind, because that was an elite-level opponent. I have not yet seen Gervonta against elite level opponent.
Estrada. Juan Francisco
Estrada. Elite level opponent. And who did he beat before he fought?
Who are we talking about?
Triple G.
Canelo?
No, Triple G. Like, you said he's an elite level. Why is he elite level? Who did he beat before he fought Canelo?
No, he's like an Andrade-like example at that point. Like,
there you go.
He was begging, calling Triple G elite.
I don't know why you're calling Triple G elite, but you're mad that I didn't call Gervonta elite. I don't like to throw that elite word
top
around.
Top 10. Top 10 is I consider top 10 elite. No? Top 10 in boxing?
And I asked you a question you haven't answered yet. Who has Triple G fought before he fought Canelo?
I'm blanking on his resume before that, but it's not great. It's Matthew Macklin types.
Come on. He didn't fight anybody. He fought Daniel Jacobs, and he could have lost that
fight. Danny Jacobs. There you go.
He fought Danny Jacobs, and it was a very, very close. He lost more rounds, but he had a knockdown.
Okay, but that's not how, I mean, boxing doesn't work that
way. No, what I'm saying is
he
barely got by.
But
you're saying he's elite.
When you fight good fighters, other great fighters, this is what happens. It's not, you know, 118,
so don't call him elite then. If he's only fought Daniel Jacobs and just got by, why are you calling him elite? He didn't fight anybody.
I thought he won the first fight against Canelo, so I give him credit for that. And I think most people thought he won the first fight against Canelo.
But
did you guys?
No. Let's just deal with the records. No, I don't say what I think happened. It was a draw, and then he got beat up the second fight.
I mean,
fight.
Come on. But do you agree with what's her name, Adelaide Bird?
Like, no,
I mean, you have to look at what happened.
No, we don't agree with that. Nobody agrees with that.
But
listen, Chris, Juan Francisco Estrada, he's on a lot of people's pound for pound list. Do you think he should be there before Javonte Davis? Give me his resume that makes it so elite that he should be on the list. Now, I don't know if you have him on your list, but he was on a lot of people's list. Why should he be on it before Javonte?
He was not on my most recent list. I think Jermell Charlo was on that. I'm trying to think of the back
not
half
bad.
Of the top
Jermell
10.
Charlo.
Jermell Charlo. Because you know why? Accomplished.
Yes.
Fights other top guys. That, to me, is what matters with the top 10. Mm-hmm. Beating guys that are a higher level. I don't care how you beat him. And to go back for Valdez for a second there. Mm-hmm. Valdez's resume, in my mind, better than Gervonta Davis. He beat Burchell, who I think is a much better win than Pedraza. I think so. He beat Scott Quigg when Quigg was still a pretty good fighter at that time and walked through fire to get that fight done. I think he broke his jaw in that fight. Jason Velez, not a great win, but that's kind of a mid-level.
Let's not say Jason Velez. Right.
Okay, but like, fine, let's just go with those two then. I think Quigg is better than any second win. I think Quigg
better than Santa Cruz.
And Santa Cruz has a better resume than all of them. Understand that Santa Cruz is a good fighter. Abner Morris and Carl Frampton are great wins, and he outboxed these guys.
Different weight class. It matters. It does matter at these lighter weights.
You know how small Javonte is? He's 5'5 and a half. He's smaller than almost
anybody
he's fought.
But he's a sturdy lightweight.
No, he's a great fighter. That's what he is. He's a great fighter.
And he hits hard.
I just like the undefeated record stuff. That seems to be what gets pointed to a lot.
Okay.
And Fonseca's resume before Gervonta sucked. Liam Walsh's resume before Gervonta.
You're arguing Sergio Mora because we didn't say that. You know what I'm saying? Like, no, we're not I'm not saying
Ock just
Liam
said,
Walsh.
Ock, you, no, Ock, you,
I was
Ock just pointing out.
I was pointing out some numbers. All right. That's all. I was pointing out some numbers, but
the numbers are relevant. Like, did you guys think? Hold on. Did you guys think Avni Yildirim was a good win for Chris Eubank when he beat him? He was undefeated. Right. Was that a good win for him? 16-0.
I'm not saying all undefeated fighters are great. What I'm saying is Gervonta's win. I'm not, just because of that 130, I'm not ignoring his win against Pedraza, undefeated Pedraza, to win his title. I believe Santa Cruz, though he was 4 pounds heavier after those wins at featherweight, he still was a hell of a fighter, and he did well in that fight.
I don't think he was and a Gervonta, hell of a fighter. Okay. Well,
I mean, he doesn't have a Hall of Fame resume?
Yeah.
That's great. Of course he has a Hall of Fame resume.
Oh, my God.
I can't scream Hall of Fame yet. I haven't dissected it.
He will be in the Hall of Fame, but listen.
Okay.
You said weight classes matter. Gervonta went up 10 pounds and beat an undefeated fighter. Mario Barrios is a threat to anybody. That is legacy right there.
Well,
10 pounds? No. If you're talking about 4 pounds with Leo Santa Cruz, then just give him credit. Who cares about the WBA? We're not talking about the belt.
I don't care about that belt. I give him credit. I absolutely give
him
credit.
Forget about the belt, though.
No, let's finish.
Is Barrios a real 140 pounder that can beat? All right,
he is a legitimate 140-pound fighter who two fights earlier lost to Bekhter Akhmedov and got a gift of a decision. I was at that fight, too. It was on the Spence undercard.
Hey,
I thought he lost that fight.
Even the best lose fights and get the decisions. Floyd Mayweather.
I'm just saying, but other than that, what's his resume look like? I always look at resume.
He's 10 pounds.
Resume.
I get that. He hasn't had the chance to fight great fighters yet, but he's 10 pounds above him. No matter what, you get credit for that. When Roy Jones Jr. went up to heavyweight, he didn't fight Holyfield. He didn't fight Mike Tyson. He fought John Ruiz. You still get credit for going up in weight, and I don't want to become so desensitized that if you go up two weight classes, you don't get credit.
You get credit for going up two weight classes where I'm not, I mean, really one. He fought at 135.
He's not a 135 pounder. You know, he fought.
Well, he's
he
going
fought,
back.
He fought
he's
one
going
guy,
back to 135.
One guy.
Like, he's going to 135. He'll never make 130 again. We can.
But
he can
still,
even stop.
But if we ask about his, if he retires today, you'll see him box rec. He was a 130-pound fighter.
Yeah. Oh yeah. But I mean, he's 26. So yeah. I mean, like, he's done. Like, just like many other great fighters, I believe he's totally done at a lower weight class. His body naturally grows. He's moving up to 135 pounds. By the way, did you guys think Kamil Sharameta was a good win for Golovkin? He was undefeated. Is that a good win?
No. You made
that's
your point.
That's not a good argument
undefeated.
Either. That's not a good argument because I'm not saying.
It is.
I'm not,
he was undefeated.
I'm not saying nothing
records
about undefeated records. I'm naming guys who I think are good, and I'm naming him going up 10 pounds, which Triple G did not do his whole career, and you call him elite, and he did not beat anybody, but got a little bit past Danny Jacobs, call him elite.
Look, Barack, I think you set it off.
A little bit past Daniel Jacobs is like, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? No. Like, Daniel Jacobs was a top guy at middleweight at that time, and Golovkin beat him. He beat him, fair and square.
Chris, top guy who didn't have a great resume neither. He had Kid Chocolate, and that was it.
Yeah. No, I mean, but when you
if
talk
you really
about
want
Boo-Boo
to talk
Andrade,
about it, that's my
talk,
friend.
No, when you talk about Boo-Boo Andrade, who I think is an elite fighter, even though he hasn't fought other elite fighters, because I feel the way you do, but it's off of the eyeball test. So we're essentially doing the same thing with Gervonta Davis that you do with Boo-Boo Andrade.
In a way.
No,
you're right.
I don't
want
to compare him to that because he's beating champions. He beat three champions.
No, I'm not comparing his resume. I'm saying I'm comparing the way Chris feels about Andre, meaning he can't name big names on his record, but I won't fault Chris for saying he's an elite fighter because I agree with him. But I just can't believe you can't watch Gervonta Davis fight and not say that guy is special.
I think he's an attraction for sure. That I am positive of. Barack, I thought you didn't get into champions. I mean, who are the three champions? We call him Barrios the champion now?
Hugo,
I can go in my backyard
Ruiz.
And fight somebody.
Hugo Ruiz was the champion. No, Barrios.
Oh, come on. We're going
no,
Hugo
no,
Ruiz.
No, but he was I'm just saying you got to listen, when a man.
Was he a real champion?
He was a real IBF champion.
Hugo Ruiz?
Hugo Ruiz, do your homework. He was a real champion.
Now, hold on. Hugo Ruiz, he won the title against Pedraza. 130-pound title.
I know, but he
the
was
IBF
a former
title,
champion.
Which is the real belt.
He was a former champion at super bantamweight.
Oh,
what I'm saying
champion.
Is,
okay, well, now
well, look, Canelo beat 16 champions. They weren't all champions when he fought them
at the time,
but he beat 16 champions more than everybody else.
Many of them were actual champions at the time. Many of them.
Not all.
Were
no,
champions.
Not all of them.
I mean, look at the. I mean, Kovalev, Callum Smith. Billy Joe Saunders, Gennady Golovkin.
Of course, the more recent ones. But he fought. But on the way up, you fight former champions.
Aris Landy Lara.
That's a question. Listen, on the way up, you fight former champions. That's all, and that's every fighter.
You can't. But whenever Gervonta fights a top guy, he's probably not going to knock him out. He's probably going to like have to go the distance and be in a grueling war, as every top fighter is. When you fight the best, that's how it goes. You don't get those early knockouts. That's why on every fighter's resume, most of those knockouts that are on it come early in their career. The large percentage of them come early in their career.
Canelo knocked out Billy Joe, and he's at the top of the super middleweight.
But I think that's one of the exceptions rather than the rule. For the most part, you go decision. Golovkin was the same way. He fought better competition. He wasn't knocking them out. He had to go the distance with guys like Canelo a couple of times, Daniel Jacobs.
He wasn't fighting good fighters before that.
But that's normally the case. I agree with that, Chris. But there are a small percentage of fighters that have that special power, like Deontay Wilder. And I think Gervonta Davis falls in that category where he'll still, in my opinion, he'll still knock out elite fighters once he lands that shot. But yes, we have to see it.
We do have to see it. By the way, Yuriorkis Gamboa, he was a big...
He has mastered the art in surviving. That man had mastered that art. It's hard to knock that guy out.
I agree. I think, guys, let's bring it to where we agree on. And we all want to see Gervonta in big fights.
Oh, my God.
Like, yeah, I get whacked around on social media being a Gervonta hater. I'm not. I just don't care about Mario Barrios. I didn't care about Yuriorkis Gamboa. There are so many fights out there that he could be in that I care about that he's not. I mean, you know, you guys have had Bill Haney on. Bill gets so mad at me when I call Ryan Garcia a shot caller, but that's a fact. Like, Ryan Garcia is a shot caller at the 135-pound division. Right now, Gervonta Davis is also a shot caller at 130, 135, 140. He can bring other fighters over to his side of the street and make those fights. Why? Answer me this. Why do you think we're hearing from Floyd Mayweather, from Leonard Ellerbe, who seemed to have no interest in putting Gervonta in with Teofimo Lopez, with Devin Haney, with Josh Taylor? Why do you think we're hearing that?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If you watch the show, I went in on Floyd Mayweather for those statements because
I totally disagree.
I think it's ridiculous what Floyd is saying. Gervonta is a soft-spoken kid who's very loyal to his team, maybe to a fault. But at this point, he's signed to Mayweather Promotions, and he's trusting Floyd and guiding his career. I feel like Floyd is making mistakes talking about fighting in-house. That makes no sense. But what can Gervonta do at this point? He can't literally promote himself and make these fights happen. But if Floyd or Leonard comes to the table where we have a Devin Haney fight, we have a Teofimo fight, trust me, the tank is not going to say no.
You know what? You're saying that we want to see him fight. Of course we want to see him fight. Maybe he'll fight at lightweight, but there's only one person at lightweight that has a solid resume so far. You know, Ryan Garcia and Devin Haney just started fighting, you know, good opponents. You know, so they each only have one really, really good win. You know what I'm saying? So in reality, that's the same thing you're saying about any other fighter, the Pedraza or Leo Santa Cruz or anybody else that he's fighting. So beating those guys won't make him great. You know, he's just beating the top guys. And I believe that's what he's doing now. Do I like what he's saying, what Floyd is saying about in-house? Of course I don't. That's horrible. But I do agree with you. I want to see him fight the Devin Haneys. I want to see him fight the Ryan Garcia. But I believe he's elite because of the way he's dominating everybody who's stepping in the ring with him.
Ak, I take issue with something you said there about kind of, and I'll paraphrase, tell me if I'm wrong, but like, what, you know, what's Gervonta supposed to do? Like, he's got a promoter. Like, you're the fighter. These guys work for you. Like, tell them. Like, if they come to you with Chris Colbert, God, please don't let that happen. If they come to you with Chris Colbert, why don't you say, you know what? I'm good. You know, why don't I challenge myself at 26 years old? This is where he's differentiated from some of the other guys who are in their earlier 20s.
Right.
26 years old. Let me see what I can do. Should Gervonta not do that?
Of course, looking
at Mayweather and saying, you tell me what I'm doing
of
next?
Of course, but we don't know what he's doing behind closed doors. He's not going to embarrass Floyd at a press conference and say, no, Floyd, you're wrong. I want to fight these other guys. We don't know what type of conversations they're having behind closed doors. I know people that know Gervonta. I know people that have sent messages saying Gervonta wants all of those guys at 135, but he's trusting in a Mayweather way. And I don't know how long this is going to last. I do believe Teofimo Lopez has the proven resumes, along with Lomachenko at 135. I think at this point, yes, Floyd needs to change that way of thinking, but I do feel that Gervonta has been vocal about what he wants, maybe not publicly, and I do agree he should start saying it on post-fight interviews about who he wants.
Absolutely. And can I tell you, I'll put this to you, Barack, mm-hmm. like the Mayweather way, like it's the Mayweather way, but like it's misleading. It's the Mayweather way post De La Hoya, when all I can't count number of times I had to write all roads lead to Floyd Mayweather. I mean, I can just copy and repeat that from some of my texts. But before that, that wasn't the Mayweather way. Mm. Few fighters of the early 2000s took on the type of challenges that Floyd did. Mm-hmm. He fought Genaro Hernandez when I think he was 20 years old, under 10 professional fights. Yeah. He fought Diego Corrales when Corrales was a big name in the 130-pound division. Yeah. He fought Castillo, tough fight, went and fought him again and beat him more soundly in that second fight. And Floyd keeps talking about how we're not going to do cross promotions, we're not going to make other people money. That's what he did early on. One of the biggest coming out parties for Floyd Mayweather, I believe his debut on pay-per-view, was against Arturo Gatti. Yes. And he did that as a co-promotion with Main Events. Yep. He went to New Jersey in front of Gatti's fans to fight him. He basically milked some popularity off of Arturo Gatti. His very next fight, he did it with Golden Boy, and he fought Oscar De La Hoya, who was the money man in that division. So this idea that Mayweather did this, so Gervonta's following the blueprint, Gervonta Barack is following second half Mayweather blueprint. He's skipping over the first part and just going to the second half.
I mean, who wouldn't have seen some of the biggest fights in history if promoters didn't cross-promote fights? You wouldn't have seen De La Hoya, Trinidad. You wouldn't have seen so many fights. So, yeah, I agree with you, and I said it. I said the same thing on the show. I mean, Floyd has benefited more than anybody with the Pacquiao fight in a cross-promotion type of fight. And that was actually with networks and everything. So, yeah, that's hypocritical for Floyd to say. Something has to change. Still doesn't erase the fact that, in my opinion, Gervonta is an elite fighter and top 10 pound for pound.
Yeah, along the way, somewhere Floyd changed, because in the beginning of Mayweather Promotions, all he used to say is, I'm putting my guys up against tough guys, you know, and that's what he actually used to do. And that's why a lot of his guys had losses. You know, Badu Jack, Bellows, and all these other guys, Ishae Smith, they had a lot of losses because he put him in against tough competition. I think the politics overpowered Floyd, and it's not just Floyd, it's PBC as well, and the war that all of these promotional companies have with each other, and that's the bad part of boxing.
Oh, it absolutely is, and I agree. It's more than just a Gervonta Davis issue. Yeah. I listened to the interview you guys did with Jermall Charlo, and like the word salad he put together to describe why he wasn't fighting Demetrius Andrade continues to not make sense to me. I mean, that's just it's just a bad look overall. But that's a deeper topic we're going to have to get into. One last thing for you guys, and keeping it on Gervonta. Like, if you want to keep, you know, it in-house in the PBC universe, am I missing something? Is Regis Prograis not the guy?
That's like, what I said.
Like, is that not, like, Regis is on Instagram right afterwards saying, I can make 140. Right. Let's do this. They're both kind of smallish guys, although Prograis is more of a natural 140-pounder and, you know, about to move up to 147. Like, you want to test yourself, there's the guy. That's a massive fight. And I think we can all agree the judges don't be needed for that one. No judges necessary. Somebody's going home on their back.
If he was to win that fight, let's say Gervonta Davis won that fight, would you say that he's an elite fighter?
Yes, absolutely. I think Regis Prograis is not A-level, but like B-plus, I want to say. Like, lost a really close fight to Josh Taylor, but like I think he's right there underneath that A level. That to me would be the biggest win of Gervonta's career and establish himself as a top 10 guy on my list.
I agree with you. That's the fight to make happen if they're going to keep it in-house. And maybe it does happen. Who knows?
I'll call Floyd right now. So. And I'll
I love it. Guys, you do a tremendous job on the DAZN Boxing Show. Check it out every single weekday on the DAZN app, DAZN.com. I always get a chance to argue with you a couple times a week, like from afar. Now I'm good. We can look face to face here on camera and have this argument that we've been having back and forth on the show. Thanks for joining me, fellas.
Thanks for having us. Peace.
Our pleasure, brother. Thank you so much.
We've all had that dream. Tie game, bottom of the ninth, bases loaded. Well, on FanDuel Sportsbook, you get more than one shot to swing for the fences, because FanDuel is letting you place your first bet risk-free. That's right. New users get up to $1,000 back in site credit if your first bet doesn't win. And it only gets better from there. Check out FanDuel's new promo live every Tuesday. $5 Dinger Tuesdays. place a $25 plus wager on any player to hit a home run on Tuesday and get a $5 bonus in site credit for every home run hit in the same game. Max $25. I'm going to mess around and fire on my San Diego Padres plus 410 to win the NL. Why wouldn't we with this kind of a bonus? Although with same game parlays preferred, I'll take a Padres moneyline W any day, any dollar, and a Fernando Tatis going yaya at Petco Park or on the San Diego road. It doesn't matter. This kind of a bet, this kind of a promotion, you cannot Fernando Tatis El Nino miss out on. There is a reason FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sportsbook. The app is simple to use. They've got great odds on all different betting markets, unique, fun bet types like same-game parlay, and always-on promotions to let you get more action out of every game day. And when you win FanDuel, we'll pay your winnings in as little as 24 hours. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and sign up with promo code Mannix to get in on the action. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code Mannix. Disclaimer, 21 plus and present in Indianapolis or New Jersey. First online real money wager only for risk-free bet. Refund and bonus issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max bonus, $25 per game. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT, Indianapolis, or 1-800-GAMBLER, New Jersey. So, you're a sports fan. That's why you're listening, baby. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. And I'm all over it like Revis Island. I have nothing but great things to say about it. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can see the latest picks and articles from Action Network gambling experts, as well as personalities like Colin Cowherd, compare odds from different sports books, and track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So, if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter.
All right, JoJo Diaz is here, the former 130-pound champion. On July 9th, he will be back, this time at 135 pounds. When he faces Javier Fortuna, that's a fight you can see live on DAZN or in California, Los Angeles specifically, if you're out in that area. JoJo, what's happening, man?
Not much, man. Just closing out camp. It's been a really, really good camp. I'm very, very excited to be fighting back in my hometown in L.A., on DAZN, and it's going to be a very, very exciting fight. I'm moving up in weight, challenging the boogeyman that a lot of 135 pounders have, you know, not wanted to fight and have been avoiding. And I'm going in there taking on the challenge and showcasing to everybody what I'm all about, not only at 135 pounds, 130, and just in boxing in general.
So talk to me about how this fight happened, because it was a couple of months ago when we thought we were going to get Javier Fortuna versus Ryan Garcia. Garcia backs out, dealing with some mental health issues right now. How did you get involved in this fight?
Yeah, well, this fight came together because I knew that I wanted to get right back into the fight. I wasn't satisfied at all with my last performance and the outcome of my last fight. So what I hit up Golden Boy and I hit up my advisory people, MTK, letting them know that I wanted to get right back into it and I want to fight ASAP to, you know, showcase to everybody that my last fight wasn't myself. And I started praying to God. I started sitting down and just praying to God, asking him to give me an opportunity. And this opportunity came up where Ryan Garcia ended up pulling out of this Javier Fortuna fight due to his mental health issues. And I wish Ryan Garcia nothing but the best. I know what it is to struggle with mental health, and it's nothing to, you know, nothing to mess around with. So I wish Ryan Garcia nothing but the best. But once I got that opportunity, once I seen that opportunity, I jumped on it. It clicked, man. It clicked in my mind where I was like, shit, let me face Javier Fortuna at 135. I can face Javier Fortuna. I can fight him at 135. And then I started, you know, hitting up MTK, started hitting up Golden Boy, hit up Robert Garcia. I was like, yo, line me up, man. Let me fight Javier Fortuna. I can fight him at 135. I can fill in the date. We could get it going, man. I've been in training camp. I've been busting my ass already. Let's set it up. They were all intrigued. And a couple of days later, 3 or 4 days later, man, we got the fight signed and we got everything going.
You know, take me back to the Rakhimov fight. Losing your title on the scale like that, how much did that hurt you?
It hurt me a lot, man. It hurt me a lot. Just knowing that everything that I worked hard for, I got took away just in one fight, me missing the weight. I really, really tried my best, though. I'm not going to say that I didn't try. I really, really tried my best. I fainted a couple times in my room. I wasn't sleeping. I had the whole fight week, man, was very, very hard for me to, you know, even function because of all my how weak my body was. My mind wasn't right, and I was just really, really fatigued and depleted. My body was just 100% giving out. But I still did what I had to do to, you know, go out there and perform at my best. And it was just unfortunate that I couldn't make the weight, but I'm just focusing on the now. I put all that beside in the past, and now my main focus is just focusing on the now and focusing on the future. And I know that it was a little minor mistake, but it's nothing that I can't bounce back of. I still, you know, got my feet going. I still got everything functioning right where I could just bounce back. And I feel like this next fight with Javier Fortuna is a great fight for me to, you know, bounce back and to get back on that pedestal.
So were you eyeing a move to 135 pounds before the Fortuna opportunity came up, or was this because Fortuna was available?
This was because the opportunity was available. I mean, I moved up to 135 pounds for Fortuna specifically. I still wanted to compete at 130 pounds because I know I can make the weight. It was just one minor slip up in my training camp where we messed up. But I still can make 130 pounds, but I feel and I know that this opportunity is very, very big for me and it's huge for me. So I accepted the 135 pound, you know, fight, and I feel that well. My body is really, really good, and I'm strong, and I'm, you know, I'm not dehydrated, I'm not weak, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go, and I could still compete at 135 pounds or 130 pounds given the opportunity.
Yeah, I tell you, JoJo, when this fight was announced, like, my first reaction was, this is a risky fight for you. Like, Fortuna's a good fighter. Like, he's only lost really at that championship level, Sosa, Robert Easter Jr. He's been 135 pounds for, I think, several years now. What gives you the confidence that, you know, in your debut, really, at 135, that you can take on a challenge like this?
I'm a beast, man. When I'm focused and when I'm determined and when I'm hungry, nobody can stop me. Nobody could beat me. And right now, my mind, both mentally and physically, is just on a whole new level. And I know that Javier is a very, very tough challenge. But like I said in previous interviews, man, I always wanted to fight the toughest challengers, like fighting Gary Russell Jr. at 126 pounds, fighting Tevin Farmer at 130, now fighting Javier Fortuna, the boogeyman, at 135. I'm always willing to accept the toughest challenges in my career because I want to give the fight fans the best fights, but I also want to get that recognition and get that respect on my name once I beat Javier Fortuna.
So what's different about this training camp as opposed to the last one?
Just more focused, more determined, more hungry. I feel like I got not only that, I feel like I wasn't as heavy going into the training camp. My last training camp, I was extremely heavy due to the COVID. The gyms were all closed down. My fiance was pregnant. I was eating a lot. It was just a lot of stuff, a lot of factors that played into and a lot of roles that played into me not making the weight and having the struggle. I mean, I was really trying to make the weight at 130 pounds for that fight. But it was just hard for me, man. My body was giving out. I was having a lot of injuries inside the training camp. And after that fight, I knew that things had to change. So I maintained my weight. I kept at the gym. I busted my ass because I knew that God was going to bless me with another opportunity because I'm focused and I'm determined. And here we are today, man. So I really, really covered all the bases this camp. I'm very, very focused. And this is the best I've looked and I felt man, in my whole entire career. I feel like this fight and this fight for sure against Javier Fortuna is probably going to be my best outing and my best performance, hands down.
How are you looking at this move to 135? Do you see it as a one-off and you go back to 130, or could you campaign at 135 for the future?
I'm going to let everybody decide that after I whoop Fortuna's ass. I'm going to let all the commentators, I'm going to let everybody decide what they want me to do, man, because like I said, I kid you not, Chris, I'm an animal right now, and it's going to show come July 9th, and I'm excited to go out there and perform at my best and to show you guys what I'm truly all about. And if the fighters at 135, Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia or Gervonta Davis, if these guys want the smoke at 135, like I said, man, I ain't willing to back down from anybody. I'm willing to accept those fights and fight those guys at 135 pounds. We can make it happen any given time.
You know, I heard Gervonta Davis say after his fight against Mario Barrios that he was a little nervous in the early rounds because he didn't know how it would feel to fight a full-fledged 140-pounder. Do you have any kind of nerves about going in with a guy that is a full-fledged 135-pounder?
No, nothing at all. I mean, this guy, Javier Fortuna, he's the same size as me. He's 5'6". He's a little bulky, but I'm bulky as well. And I feel like when I go into the fight, come fight night, I'm going to be walking around inside that ring about 150, 151. So I'm going to be solid as well. And I've been sparring guys my whole entire life at 165 pounds, 170 pounds, 140, 47 pounds. Been sparring welterweights this whole training camp. So that power is not going to be any factor. I think it's just going to be coming down to the preparation of whoever prepared better for that, for this camp and for this fight, and whoever has a better skill and whoever's going to take full advantage of that.
Do you have to adjust at all with your style? Because at 126 and 130, a lot of times you were a pressure fighter. Like, can you be that same guy at a higher weight class?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I'm going to be even more of a pressure fighter now, given the fact that my body is not depleting as much and my body is not, you know, losing as much weight and giving as much energy trying to make that weight going into the fight. My body is filled out right now and I'm feeling very, very strong, and I'm throwing a lot of punches in my sparring right now. So I feel like coming this fight, I'm going to be able to walk the guy down. I'm going to be able to land my power shots, but still be very, very effective and still, you know, be that volume puncher that I am.
Before I let you go, we're having a debate earlier in the show about how to describe Gervonta Davis, who has fought in your weight class and will probably go back to 135 at some point. Akin Barak, my friends from DAZN, they look at Gervonta as being an attraction and a great fighter. I think he's just an attraction until he proves he's a great fighter against top-level guys. How do you view Gervonta Davis?
I view Gervonta Davis as a great fighter and as an attraction. He's a hell of a fighter, man. You got to give credit where credit's due. I still think that he still hasn't fought any top-tier, you know, opponents yet. The people that he has fought were smaller, and the guy that he fought just last, I feel like it was big, but he didn't have that boxing skill that that is going to really test Gervonta Davis and that could really actually beat a fighter like Gervonta Davis. But don't get me wrong, man, Gervonta Davis is one hell of a fighter. He's a smart fighter. He's a very, very strong fighter, and he's improving every single fight. As you can see, man, he's able to, you know, not only box, but he's able to, once he sees the opportunity, he's able to go out there and take it and run him down and run and break his opponent. So I think he's one hell of a fighter, but I still think that he needs that challenge inside that ring.
Yeah, tremendous potential is how I kind of look at him. I would say, you know, he can be a great fighter when he proves himself. I mean, you've got to face those top guys. And look, you're one of those top guys. Maybe that happens for you and Gervonta down the line. JoJo, good to talk to you, man. Looking forward to July 9th. I know you were disappointed to be off as long as you were before the last fight. Now you get right back into the mix of things. Hoping for a good show, man. Good luck.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Akin Barak as well as JoJo Diaz for joining the show. Next week, Sergio Mora will be back, the former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster. I will get him if I can track him down.
Mannix, I'm a man on the run, and I'm not doing your fucking podcast. We're not doing it, bro. I'm a man on the run. On the run!
The Volume.